This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. You may remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about a deal made by the United States and several other countries and the UN Security Council and the nation of Iran over where they're going to go with their nuclear future. Essentially, it's a six-month deal that is going to check Iran's progress in making nuclear weapons and then hopefully get another agreement going forward that will keep nuclear arms from proliferating into Iran. Well, this week we had members of the United States Senate introduce legislation that essentially would put toughened sanctions on Iran. And the White House says, no, we're not going to do that because that would endanger what we're trying to do here. Let's get some perspective on all of this from Reza Morashi, who is the director of research at the National Iranian American Council, which this week came out with a report called Extending Hands and Unclenching Fists, all about the nuclear option in Iran. And I'm not talking about the nuclear option of the filibuster in the United States Senate. I'm talking literally the nuclear option. Reza, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks so much for having me.
What did you think of what the two dozen senators tried to do on Thursday?
Well, I think what the senators were trying to do is extremely unproductive and very ill-timed. You know, not only do you have the President of the United States, the White House, more generally speaking, saying that now is not the time for new sanctions, you also have the State Department, the Defense Department, and the intelligence community all saying that new sanctions at this particular point in time, while negotiations are ongoing, not only would violate the agreement that we reached, the interim deal that we reached in Geneva, that's putting significant limitations on Iran's nuclear program, but it would also cause the negotiations to break down. It would essentially kill an already fragile negotiating process. This is an important point. Why is this important? Well, it's important for two reasons. If you kill the diplomatic option, that only leaves you with the military option, war. And I think the American people have demonstrated very clearly that they're not interested in another war in the Middle East, especially if diplomacy is not given a fair try to succeed. I think it's also important, however, because right now the interim deal that we've struck with Iran does not touch the core infrastructure of the sanctions that we have, which is sanctions on Iran banks, sanctions on Iran's energy industry. Those sanctions remain while we continue to negotiate a more long-term strategic deal that will put permanent limitations on Iran's program to verifiably ensure that they will not pursue nuclear weapons.
What has the impact of these sanctions been, not on the Iranian government, which of course changed hands this year from an extremist to what we're told is a moderate, but what impact have these sanctions had on Iranian people?
Well, sanctions that have been put in place over the past 30 years have always hurt the people more than the government in Iran. But the sanctions that we've seen over the past 3 years have really put the squeeze on the Iranian people and have had far more serious and negative consequences for the Iranian people than the Iranian government. There's no shortage of academic and policy research that shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that the governments that we intend to sanction are usually the last ones to feel the pain. And the people who we're ostensibly trying to help are always the first to feel the pain. So when you reduce the value of Iran's currency through sanctions, you're wiping out the life savings of millions of Iranians inside of Iran. You're making it so that less Iranians are able to study abroad in the United States and other Western countries. You're making it so that the middle class in Iran shrinks. And, you know, the middle class is usually the engine for political change in any country. So we need to make sure that the policies that we enact, whether it's sanctions or anything else, don't adversely affect the very people that we're seeking to help create the kind of positive changes in Iran that I think we'd all like to see.
What happened to the Green Revolution of several years ago?
I think the Green Movement was a civil rights movement in Iran, and I think that the government repression that sought to put a bottle on it, or to put the lid on the bottle, if you will, put toothpaste back in the tube, if you will, has proven to fail. And the reason why it failed is because the very engine that drove the Green Movement in the 2009 Iranian election came back to the forefront in the 2013 Iranian election and basically beat the Iranian government at its own game. And told the Iranian government, you can cheat once, but you can't cheat twice. Because not only was the relationship amongst political elites in Iran extremely fragile leading up to this election, but the relationship between the government and the people was extremely fragile. So another stolen election in Iran would have produced an outcome, very likely would have produced an outcome, very similar to 2009. And the government feared that it wouldn't have been able to survive that kind of an outcome.
I mentioned this report that the National Iranian American Council put out this week called Extending Hands and Unclenching Fists. What were the conclusions from that report?
I would say that there were three key conclusions stemming from this report. One was that sanctions are certainly having a very negative impact on Iran as a country, but sanctions alone have not produced the shift in policy that we've seen in Iran since the June 2013 presidential election. The actual evidence that exists shows us that it was the Iranian people deciding to turn out at the polls that is what caused the shift, is what held the government accountable, and is what has forced the vast majority of political elites in Iran to back this more pragmatic or moderate, whatever word you wanted to use to describe it, approach that we've seen so far. The next important point that we've seen as a result of that is that these shifts in Iran are not new. These shifts existed in the late 1990s and early 2000s. The foreign policy shifts I'm talking about, where they've sought to improve the relationship with the United States more specifically and the West more generally. In 2001, they tried to collaborate with us on Afghanistan. George Bush put them in the axis of evil. In 2003, they submitted a grand bargain proposal, willing to negotiate on all of the issues of outstanding concern. The Bush administration said, we don't talk to evil. And then in 2005, from 2003 to 2005, the Iranians negotiated with the European Union. They put an offer on the table to cap the number of centrifuges that enrich uranium inside Iran to 3,000. Fast forward to 2013, they have 19,000 centrifuges. So their program has advanced. And then arguably the most important thing that our report points out is that in order to break the hardline narrative in Iran, to disprove it once and for all, the United States and other Western countries should figure out ways to increase scientific and technological collaboration with Iran, especially the Iranian people, in ways that have no proliferation risk whatsoever. We're talking about things like green energy. We're talking about things like helping the air pollution problem in Iran. We're talking about setting up an increased number of scholarships for Iranian students in the United States who want to study non-controversial topics related to science. These kinds of things can go a long way towards disproving what hardliners in Iran say, which is the root of the U.S.-Iran conflict is a powerful country in the world wanting to deprive Iran of science and technology. This is, they harp on this point over and over again. We're trying to disprove that point to create more space inside of Iran for other issues, whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, human rights, things like that, to actually get addressed, because addressing those issues are long overdue.
Sounds to me like we've got hardliner problems at both ends of this puzzle.
Well, it certainly does. And we don't want to create a moral equivalency between hardliners in one country or the next. But what we should point out is that hardliners in Tehran, hardliners in Washington, hardliners in Tel Aviv and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, all benefit and thrive in isolation. They don't want people in their country to connect to the people in the other countries. Because once that happens, it shows that propagating fear and showing that and trying to portray this myth that talking out your problems through diplomacy and negotiations can't solve problems is entirely false. The vast majority of international conflicts are solved at the negotiating table. So as a result of that, if we have a president of the United States and other U.S. government officials that are willing to test a more moderate approach to see if it can be successful vis-a-vis Iran, then what that means is there are steps that we can take, like increasing scientific and technological collaboration with Iran, that can empower the more moderate, pragmatic forces there, so that you can never eliminate hardliners altogether, but you can box them in, and you can demonstrate to the vast majority of people in all of these countries that the myths that hardliners propagate are false.
Last question for you. Have the events of this year and the election of Hassan Rouhani, have those things combined to make Iranian Americans feel better about the near future?
I think that there's an increased level of hope, an increased level of optimism. But I think Iranian Americans are also clear-eyed, very clear-eyed about the problems and obstacles that remain. That makes it all the more important for diplomacy to be successful and for us to double down on the prospects of making it successful. is creating openings on this one issue, the nuclear issue, that is overshadowing everything else, from human rights to Iraq to Afghanistan, you name it. That's going to create the opportunity. Making progress on the nuclear front creates the opportunity to pursue these other issues with the vigor and the sustained type of fashion that we should be. So Iranian Americans understand what needs to happen. They're supporting diplomacy right now. And the more success that we get at the negotiating table, the more support for diplomacy I think you'll see going forward.
I do have to ask you one more question. Part of the problem with Iran has not just been the nuclear option, but also its support of terrorism through Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda and Hamas, etc. How much of that is going to continue under Rouhani?
Well, so far we haven't seen drastic changes on those issues that are of core importance to U.S. national security interests. But what I think we can say going forward is two very important things. One, the Iranians have demonstrated in the past a willingness to negotiate on these issues. They submitted a proposal to us in 2003, and Hamas, Hezbollah, support for these other kind of groups, and their overall regional policies were on the table. They're willing to negotiate on them and make compromises, but they're willing to do it for a price. What we need to find out is at the negotiating table what that price is. And then more importantly, I would say going forward, we've tried sanctions, secret assassinations, computer viruses, and other forms of pressure as ways to try and change Iran's behavior. I don't think anybody can say with a straight face that it's produced the kind of outcome we'd all like to see. So now it's time for a new approach to see if sustained negotiations can change Iran's strategic calculations on all of these issues. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. If it does, fantastic. We've peacefully solved conflict. If it doesn't, there's no reason why we can't go back to the other kinds of pressure that we've seen in the past. There's no reason why pressure has to continue now while we are negotiating. Nobody wants to negotiate with a gun to their head, not the Iranians, not the United States. So it's time to put away the more destructive forms of pressure for a short period of time to give the more peaceful forms a chance to succeed.
Reza Morashi, who is Director of Research at the National Iranian American Council, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.